It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning we'll hear about industry hopes for the Ohio Valley, a plastic future.
It seems to us, we believe that there could be up to 5 ethane crackers.
That from the American Chemistry Council. More on that in just a minute. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The midterm election is behind us, but the implications of the election will be with us for some time. So news director Jesse Wright asked longtime West Virginia Morning contributor Dr. Robert Rupp to put this election in historical context and talk about what it means for the next legislative session.
Rob, thanks very much for joining us once again on West Virginia Morning. I really appreciate your time. Tuesday night's election, we saw pretty much business as usual with some notable exceptions. Maybe one of those was Senator Manchin holding onto his seat in what many saw as a very close race, but gettable for the Republicans. What do you think about some of the exceptions to the rules in terms of incumbents holding onto their seats and sort of the makeup of both our U.S. Congress and then at the state level?
Well, I think what we found, Jesse, is that while the nation was a polarized nation, was settling for, you know, divided government, here in West Virginia, we almost had a status quo election. It was a maintaining election. And the Republicans dominate the legislature, although few of their official leaders lost. They swept the 3 congressional House of Representatives, and they kept Joe, who on the list of the 10 most vulnerable Democrat senators, won again in this state. So again, I was surprised with all that sound and fury and money and ads that was basically maintained the status quo in West Virginia.
So there were some exceptions to that. One of them was William E. Linfelt, the former U.S. District Attorney, unseating Ryan Ferentz, as you mentioned, a leadership position that changed. Another one was Riley Moore in the Eastern Panhandle. And of course, that's where Morrissey is from. Do you see the Eastern Panhandle playing a different role in this election than maybe it has in the past?
Well, I think we have to start with the idea that the narrative for the last 8 to 10 years is the growing power and influence of the Panhandle. It's not by accident that we have Mooney and Morrissey not only are outsiders, but are coming into the Panhandle because that's where the action is. I think West Virginians and certainly political candidates have to deal with the growing influence of the Eastern Panhandle in West Virginia politics.
We also saw a clean sweep in the 51st, and we saw all the Republicans lose in that race. All 5 positions went to Democrats, some newcomers, some more established, like Barbara Fleshauer. Do you think that that stays the same into the future? Do you think that that will change? I mean, any sense of this sort of island of blue? Again, almost maintenance given the population in this area, but any thoughts on that?
I think the second area of great change is the central Mon area. And again, as you said, that's sticking out. So that's another area of change. And I think that will dictate. Someone once said that if you want to see the future of West Virginia politics, You interview a married woman living in Mon County along near I-79. We're looking at areas of growth in that areas, and those are growth means potential votes. And I always said that the party that can capture the Panhandle can capture the state. I think we better add on Mon, too, as one of those bellwether counties out of all of our 55.
I think we are already seeing some of the shift in economic power. A lot of the migration within the state is coming from the south to the north. following jobs, following economic prosperity. So I do see that as a factor, yeah.
I always said politics is the last to move, and what happens first is the economic center of power is moving in that northeast direction. Then it's followed by population. But Jesse, what's the last thing to change? It's the politics. And that's why so long we had the southern counties dominate leadership positions in Charleston. That is not true anymore because we've seen first economic shift, then population shift, and then finally political shift.
So given that, do you see any changes or how do you see this playing out in the next legislative session coming up very quickly in early January?
Well, one is that the Republicans continue to dominate the state legislature. And the question is, what are they going to do? What are they going to propose? And I think 2020 should be worrisome on that. And I think one is they've already adopted, they've suddenly hugged a teacher in this election by being first adversaries to the teacher strike, and then suddenly now they're trying to incorporate. So they got to settle that problem, which they already have by putting more money into it. But as far as the future goes, I really don't know. How about that? Because in
that's
a sense,
an acceptable answer,
that's
I think.
An acceptable answer. The interesting thing about 100 years of West Virginia politics is we've never had a competitive two-party system. We have flipped from Republican to Democrat, then Republican, then 80 years of Democrat. So in a sense, we're now here with Republican domination, and sometimes you get what you wish for and may not work out as well as expected. But again, we don't believe in competition that much, and therefore we don't need bipartisanship. So as far as what the Republican future is charted, I think that's up in the air, even with them.
Dr. Rob Rupp, thanks very much for joining us once again and giving us your insight.
Well, thank you.
That was Jesse Wright speaking with Dr. Robert Rupp, a professor of history and political science at West Virginia Wesleyan College in Buchanan, about the implications of this week's election. Along the Ohio River, many hope the next phase of the natural gas industry, plastics, will rebuild the region's manufacturing base. The Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports.
The Ohio Valley has long been known for coal and making steel, but the future, according to some predictions, is natural gas and plastics. Richard Regula is a commissioner in Stark County, Ohio, and is working to expand the petrochemical industry.
What's going to happen in this region, in the Utica and the Marcellus Shale plays, is going to impact us in a positive direction for the next 100 years, in my opinion, at least 50.
More than 2,400 gas wells have been drilled using hydraulic fracturing in Ohio since 2012. Regula is talking not only about the cheap gas from that, but the spin-off industries and development many expect. Excitement's been building since this announcement back in 2016.
This morning, local leaders learned that Shell Chemical will be building an ethane cracker plant in Beaver County.
Right now, the ethane, which is a component of the natural gas that's produced at the region's wells, is exported to China, Europe, or piped to the Gulf Coast. Shell's $6 billion facility along the Ohio River in Pennsylvania will crack the ethane at very high temperatures to make ethylene locally.
Ethylene is a major raw material for the production of polyethylene.
Heather Rose Glowacki is with the American Chemistry Council, a trade group.
Polyethylene goes into thousands of products that people use every day.
Like plastic bags.
You know, medical devices.
And car parts. A study by the Chemistry Council looked at the ethane supply in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia.
It seems to us, we believe that there could be up to 5 ethane crackers supported in that region.
They envision an Appalachian petrochemical hub as an alternative to the Gulf Coast. Supporters of this idea like to repeat these numbers: 12,000 manufacturers who use plastics are already located within a day's drive, 600 miles of the region. But those manufacturers don't have access to a local supply of polyethylene.
Right now, this industry operates and using the product that is transported from the Gulf Coast, from Texas, from Louisiana, from other established petrochemical places.
Irina Lendl is an economist at Cleveland State University who researches the oil and gas industry in Ohio. She says ethane crackers close the loop between gas wells and plastic manufacturers.
That's a whole point, to link our oil and gas that we are pumping out, to use this, refine it, and use this within the region.
A decision is expected soon about construction of a second ethane cracker, a $10 billion facility that would be built along the river in Ohio. And a company called Mountaineer NGL Storage could start storing natural gas liquids like ethane in salt caverns in the region as soon as next year. Lendl says that to create a real petrochemical hub, the region would also need more plastic and resin manufacturing, more chemical manufacturing, and more petroleum refineries to build a supply chain.
The more product we refine within the region, the more and longer we keep this product within our economies, the more we capture benefits and economic wealth.
Officials in Stark County, Ohio, say the Shell cracker is already creating new business interests there.
Oh, I think it's extremely exciting.
Ray Hexamer, president of the Stark Economic Development Board, says in the past 6 months alone, three companies have come to them looking at opportunities in the plastics industry.
What it means for Northeast Ohio, they're good-paying jobs. Those jobs will elevate the economic environment for our community. We all get lifted by a rising tide.
A new, yet-to-be-published study by economists at Washington and Jefferson College, south of Pittsburgh, bolsters that argument. It finds that counties with ethane crackers have higher individual earnings than the national average by more than $5,600 per year. The study found that counties adjacent to cracker plants also saw an earnings boost. But of course, locking the region into a petrochemical hub of gas wells, pipelines, chemical cracking, and plastics manufacturing is concerning to many people. Outside a meeting of Marcellus Shale industry leaders in Pittsburgh this week, about 60 people, including members of various native tribes, gather to protest. Standing where the Allegheny meets the Ohio River, Sharon Day of Minnesota, a member of the Ojibwe Nation, remembers her long walk along the Ohio a few years ago.
You know, this is a beautiful, beautiful river, and it has undergone so much stress and pollution over the years that it's going to really require effort by everybody to make her healthy again.
Well, supporters of petrochemical development say they trust regulators to protect public safety and the environment. Cheryl Johncox of the Sierra Club's Beyond Dirty Fuels campaign, based in Columbus, Ohio, doesn't think they should.
We can't assume that the regulators are taking care of that anymore.
She points to the recent explosion of a natural gas pipeline that destroyed a home in Pennsylvania as an example of the safety concerns. And when it comes to keeping the air and water clean, Johncox gives a litany of regulatory rollbacks.
They are trying to gut the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, all the components, the methane emissions protocols. They're attacking the Ohio River Water Sanitation Commission. There is a no-holds bar on those protections.
In Ohio, Stark County Commissioner Richard Regula doesn't see reason for concern about the environment. His family has a long history in Ohio politics, including his father Ralph Regula's 18 terms in Congress.
My father was the founder of the Ohio EPA, and I'm carrying on his legacy to protect the environment. But to me, this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity.
Regula is pushing for roadway improvements to help expansion of a Marathon oil refinery in his county and looks forward to all the jobs he expects in the coming years. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.